Hour number two of the show, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studio. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata. And I'll keep throwing this out there, too, as just an update from Cardinals camp today. Rodney Hudson, Justin Pugh, Andy Isabella, and Keyshawn Johnson in COVID protocol. DeAndre Hopkins sitting out practice with what was called a, quote, minor thing, unquote, by Cliff Kingsbury. But he did say he will be back soon. But, I mean, so we're looking, you know, we got NFL Network on in here, and all of the training camps, all the teams seem to have, like, one or two big name veteran players are like, yeah, I'm sore, I'm out.
I mean, if you're going to hurt your thing, at least it's only minor.
Yeah, it might be a minor thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, that happens because going out there and competing and playing football is just so significantly different than being in the weight room and or running on the field when nobody's trying to hit you or get after you. Competition is a big change.
So even like specifically, I mean, any Cardinals fan that just happens to be on social media, it's you can't avoid video of J.J. Watt working out ever since he got here. I mean, even when he announced he was coming here, he announced it working out in a Cardinals shirt.
Right.
So he's obviously been working out. Obviously, these guys are all working out. Watt's sort of notorious for it. But, I mean, how different is it? Like you just said, you're lifting weights, you're doing everything, and then the first day of camp, maybe the stuff's not even as strenuous, but it's just so different.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously, first of all, you're excited to be back. And so, you know, you love playing the game. You're passionate about it. Depending on who you are, you're, you know, obviously trying to vie for a spot. But even when you think about guys like J.J. Watt, I mean, when you come back, I used to still get butterflies and have some of that anxiety about, you know, the type of player I was going to be and what I was going to do in practice. And so you want to go out there and compete full tilt, which is different than you doing that at when you're working out in a room by yourself. Right. And he may train with some other guys. But when you're trying to get back with your team and really establish yourself as far as who you want guys to know you as.
Yeah.
You just take it up another tick, and whether it happens in the conditioning test or even out at practice, it is just significantly different because now you're competing for your job and the type of player that you are, working on your technique, and everything we know doesn't happen perfectly every time. So being, you know, caught on one leg or having your arm out too far, all those little things that you have to callus up and build can sometimes strain earlier on in the season, and especially if you're coming off, you know, just looking up at the board, seeing Dak coming off, you know, his ankle injury last year, and he has to now, he's healed, but his body's still trying to figure out, how do I compensate for that injury, because I know I just sustained it, and so now he has, you know, shoulder soreness or issues, and they're giving him MRIs, and all that stuff, you know, is connected and adds up, and so that's just the shift that you see when you come back to, you know, playing football and getting out of the weight room.
Is there a point, like, I mean, some of the years where you had like a really good year, did you hit a point in training camp where you're just like, I mean, you can never predict injuries, obviously, but just in terms of like, were you ever at that point where you just like clicked, you're like, this is gonna be a good year, like everything just feels right, I'm comfortable on this team, I'm comfortable where I fit, I feel good about my offseason and everything?
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times for me. I think the first time it really happened when I just felt didn't feel like I was fighting for my life, you know, just to keep my head above water and be on the roster. Like my last year in Washington, 2012, I had lost another like 20 pounds in the offseason. So I came in lean and mean and felt really good running around, flying. And that year I ended up making the Pro Bowl. But I could feel it based on my preparation and just how things were clicking, especially earlier on in that season. And I think just the confidence built starting the first day doing the conditioning test and things just progressed. And I think when you get into those zones, you know, it happens in games, but it also can happen over time based on how you feel and just the building consistency throughout, you know, practice, games, and then the season. It had to be 2012 for me.
Cliff Kingsbury yesterday talking about just, you know, where this team was at the end of last season and how maybe that's still in the minds of the guys that were on this roster last year.
Definitely. It has been. Nobody was happy with how that ended. It's just an abrupt end. You don't expect it to happen, and then you kind of go your own way. And so we've definitely addressed it in the team meeting, and there's a lot of new faces that weren't around for it, but they understand how it happened and what it looked like, and there's a lot of highly motivated players.
Yeah, he also followed it up with, you know, we're going to talk about it for a second and then just kind of move on.
We want to touch on it early and then move past it, and that's, there are enough things that we needed to address from last year and make sure we understood where it went wrong to try and not make those same mistakes this year.
So, I mean, I'm sure you've been in a spot like that. Obviously, for the Cardinals last year, they get off to that really nice start. They're 6-3 after the Hail Mary against Buffalo, and then it just all falls apart. And so you had a team that 9 games into the season, you felt pretty good about your chances to make the playoffs. Even the last 2 weeks of the season, you're playing backup quarterbacks. You just couldn't score offensively enough to win one of those games and get in. A lot of the guys on this team were on that team last
right.
year. So it's in your mind, right? But you also you can't be thinking about that now in 2021.
No, you're not thinking about it. You're just working towards making sure it doesn't repeat itself, just like what Cliff just said. And so you have to address those issues. I think bad leadership, you know, whether it's player or organization, sometimes you just kind of look over it and assume guys know what's going on. But you have to be very clear and have clear directives as far as this is what we're going to do. As far as me as a play caller and how I've run the team, and then you obviously have had conversations with guys, whether it's Kyler, whether it's Hop, whether it's, you know, Jordan Phillips or Chandler Jones. Hey, this is what I need you to do. This is where we fell short at last year, and I need you to be in that locker room. When you see something, you need to do something about it. And when you have a collective buy-in from top down like that, that's when you start getting over the hump and you don't have that 6-3 start and then things fall apart, but you're able to consistently rise above. And that's regardless of injuries or talent, because those things are going to happen. And it's all about how can you be resilient collectively in order to overcome those obstacles, because you know they're coming. But building right now in training camp, and that's why training camp is real essential, because you build a lot of that character up. So when it occurs in the game or in the season, guys are ready to step up. And then also guys already have that expectation of what's expected. And you have to talk about it. So hopefully he doesn't just talk about it today, like he said, right?
Yeah.
You have to constantly revisit it, because it was a habit. Something happened constantly that allowed your frame of mind to, you know, fall apart. And what they've done the last couple of years, right? Finishing 5-11 over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So something is not allowing you to finish strong. And so you have to address it consistently, appropriately, because you don't want to do it every single day.
Yeah.
But just to make sure guys know and remind them, okay, this is where we're at. We're 6-3 again. We understand what happened last year. We need to step up and make sure that we don't get complacent or get unfocused and fall apart.
So one of the areas that a lot of people look at with this year's team and say, okay, there's question marks is in the secondary. And we had Darren Urban on yesterday. I thought he made a good point too. It's like, it's not so much the secondary. Like you're actually pretty well set at safety with Buda Baker and some of the other guys. It's just more so, it's not that your corners are bad. There's just question marks there. Now, the guy that you're really leaning on is Malcolm Butler, who was on Big Red Rage last night. And he talked about the pass rush and how that can help out the corners on this team.
Quick passes, man. Bad throws into our hands. You know, pass rush is everything. You can have a good corner, a great corner, Hall of Fame corner. You ain't got no pass rush. You know, you can't cover that long. So it should help out a lot.
Okay, so I want to ask you this, so because just logistically from my point of view, it seems like you – if you have J.J. Watt and you have Chandler Jones, and now you have Marcus Golden, who you didn't have, and whenever Dennis Gardeck comes back, or Zaven Collins, or Isaiah Thomas, if you can get to the quarterback so quickly that they can't even go through their progression, you can kind of mask some inexperience in the secondary, right?
Yeah, and it's complimentary. And I wouldn't say and there's some Byron Murphy's a really good player, too. There's some other guys that I think it's just different, right? Because the no fly zone and all those guys are gone. So now it's just different. But Malcolm Butler had a really good season last year. So I don't think there's a significant drop off from what was out there last year to what's there now. It's just that we're unsure
fair.
And we don't quite know, because we don't have any experience with these guys collectively, right?
Well, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of experience in terms of depth. Like if Malcolm Butler had to miss a couple games, you might be playing a rookie.
Yeah, and that's most teams in the NFL, right?
That's fair.
It's hard to play corner. It's like quarterback. You can't. It's not like these cats just grow on trees.
Yeah.
And so that's why training camp, OTAs, all that stuff is more important for younger guys, so that when you put a guy in, you trust him, at least you know he's going to do and be in the position he's going to be. Is he going to make a Pat P type of play? I don't know. I know Malcolm Butler has that ability. And so that is just what they have to do. But the pass rush is definitely significant help, and it's complimentary. When you have guys that can cover, it gives me time to rush. When I can beat my guy quickly, I get a chance to maybe create an interception for you, make a guy speed up his progression, maybe throw a ball, allows Buda Baker that extra split second to get over the top and pick the ball off, or have a big hit to jar the ball loose. And so they work together. You can't depend on one or the other, because if I beat my guy really quick, and he's throwing the ball because you're not covering him. My great move, I just wasted my great move.
Yeah.
Right? So they both have to work in tandem in order to have the type of success that they want, especially when you're playing, you know, the guys in this division and what they're able to do.
More from Malcolm Butler talking about just his expectations for the Cardinals now that he's on the team.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm learning the playbook, you know, getting to know my teammates, you know, trying to lead by example and not by talking all the time, you know. I hear hustling to the ball, you know, studying my playbook, you know, encouraging the young guys to make plays and, you know, fight their way on the roster, you know, just like I did. And, you know, I got big expectations for the Arizona Cardinals this year. We just got to play as a team, you know, play as a team and, you know, work hard and grind, man, and, you know, be together. And this won't be perfect, but if you put your heart and soul into it, man, it should work out your way.
It's crazy when you think about it because, I mean, you're right. From what Patrick Peterson was last year to what Malcolm Butler should be this year, there really shouldn't be a drop-off. It might even be a step up. But when you think about Malcolm Butler, it's like this guy probably has the most famous interception in NFL history, right? I mean, because, yeah. I mean, it's in the Super Bowl to instantly win a Super Bowl.
Certainly right. More famous than that loser James Harrison. Yeah, I don't even remember that one.
So the first person to ever call James Harrison a loser.
Right. You better watch out. James lives in Phoenix now.
Does what? He really?
Yes, he does. You saw that commercial?
Well, my name
don't let him catch you on the lawn somewhere.
My name is Jesse Morrison.
That's amazing. I was like, Jared only did that because he thought he was still 3,000 miles away. And even then, it's like he could get here pretty quick, I feel like.
Yeah. You got to watch out.
Oh, I'd pay a lot of money to have James Harrison in studio right now, like over there, and Jarrett doesn't know. I'd be like, yeah, okay, here we go. No, but I mean, to have a guy, and that interception ironically came here. I mean, it wasn't State Farm Stadium at the time, but it's the same building and everything. So, like, he's in a weird way, like, coming home to his greatest moment of his career, one of the best moments, one of the best single moments I have to think any player's ever had in their career.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully that translates to him playing really well at home. I know I had stadiums that I would go around to that I had played well in before.
Yeah.
And you just feel confident when you walk out. Oh, man,
really?
This is what I did last time. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really, you know, it's like going home. You're comfortable in that situation. When you've had success in places.
Yeah.
So when you're back in those familiar settings, it definitely helps out, you know. We were kind of talking about this off air, you know, that mental psyche as far as what you're going to go out there and be able to do in that day, in that game.
Well, that'd be huge because if Malcolm Butler is, if he ends up being like, we go through like the players that would be most important on this team of like, oh, okay, if this guy has a good year, you feel pretty good. You know, obviously set Kyler Murray aside for a second, but I mean, Malcolm Butler's got to be right near the top of that list. Because even if
you have to be.
If J.J. Watt had a down year, maybe Chandler Jones has a good year or vice versa. Like, I feel like a lot of these guys, and you're right, Byron Murphy, we don't probably talk about enough because they obviously have high expectations for him. But Butler in particular, it's like you're kind of stepping into Patrick Peterson's old role. If he has a big year, it's like this defense could be a legitimate defense.
Yeah. I mean, the way he plays, the way he tackles, the way he covers, he is the number one corner. And so he has to lead by his production in the way he plays. And that's what he's doing right now. He's learning the playbook, getting confident there, you know, encouraging younger guys. And so he's doing that already as far as being that guy that they brought him in here to do. To be that veteran presence. And so he's going to have to continue that, obviously go out there and then prove it, which I have all the confidence in the world in him being able to do. I got a chance to watch him, you know, maybe four or five times last year in Tennessee. And, I mean, he was coming up being physical, hitting guys. And I think that's another area where that can really take your secondary to another level when you have guys not only covering and doing what they need on the back end, but also being part of that front where in this league they're making guys – especially your corners tackle now will crack and replace, especially when we see these first couple of weeks, the running backs that they have. When you have a guy that can come up and at least get the guy on the ground, which he's capable of doing, I think it's going to really help this team.
He also played, obviously, a big chunk of his career for Bill Belichick, which, you know, I would assume, right, as a player, you bring a little bit from each of your coaches to a new team. You kind of – some of that stuff that they say stays with you, right?
Yeah, it does. Bill is a special situation, though. Yeah. everywhere else he's gone, it's probably been a little easier, even though Vrabel came from that Bill Belichick tree, too. But just the culture that Bill has, the great thing about what he's probably taken from Bill is how to work, right? How to prepare. And so I think that will be, I think it's probably his biggest gift that he can give to some of these guys that he'll be in contact with this year. Not that Pat P didn't do that, But obviously, just being another voice, another perspective to really solidify what Pat P may have been trying to show him last year. Like, man, it's another guy that works hard like this. Because a lot of times we talk about these young guys, they come in and they think they work hard, but that's relatively to the guys that they came from college
that's
with
college
or,
working
or
hard.
Bad organizations that's not working hard. But to be elite and to maintain that takes a whole nother level of being locked in, whether it's training, watching film, whether how you practice. And I know the way Malcolm goes about his business, he's going to be able to impart that too. And I think he got that from obviously being in New England for those years.
He did talk about what it was like playing for Bill Belichick.
Man, I got so much respect for, you know, Bill Belichick. You know, I know things that, you know, they didn't work out the way that, you know, they're supposed to win at the end. But I got so much respect for him, man. He's a great coach. You know, it's like everything that he says is right. You know what I mean? You can't sometimes be like, I don't like what he's saying, but he's right.
Right.
And I seen this guy do some things that that I never seen coaches do before. You know, spraying water on the snapper's hands while it's field goal. Making the DBs take their hands up with tennis balls. He's a great coach. I got nothing but great things to say about Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft and their organization, and I appreciate him for giving me an opportunity.
So, you know, Belichick, like you said, he's a special case. Doesn't like coffee, apparently. He's built up all this this reputation over the years, obviously rightfully so. I can't even keep track of how many Super Bowls he has now. But when you flip that to a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who is still an unknown in terms of coaching, I mean, that's sort of the other extreme. This is only going to be his third year. A lot of people still have questions. I think it's a very pivotal year for Kingsbury. You know, Belichick can do something unconventional like he's talking about right there, and people are going to be like, okay, you give him the benefit of the doubt because, as Malcolm Butler just said, he's always right, even if you don't want him to be.
Right.
I mean, if you're a young coach like Cliff Kingsbury, how – you don't have the same freedom or leeway. You're not going to get the same like benefit of the doubt from all your players all the time, are you?
Yeah, especially not the older guys who've been around some other places, or, you know, because how old is Cliff? What is late 30s?
Yeah, maybe.
Young 40s.
Young 40s. You know, so even, I mean, like a guy like myself, when I was in the locker room, you know, being 36, 37, that relationship is a little bit different. And so I'm not necessarily as impressionable as some younger guys.
Yeah.
And so it does take you some time as far as building that relationship and being consistent in who you are. And you don't have to be Bill Belichick to be impactful or a good coach. But I think there is a growth process of being a head coach in the NFL. And I really saw it with Sean McDermott, you know, and how do you manage? And what Sean didn't do, he wasn't the coordinator. I know Cliff still calls a lot of the plays, right? And so being a head coach is a lot more administrative work and overseeing, and, you know, and are you able to call the plays too? And so are you comfortable in hiring somebody that can do that for you? And so you have to kind of figure out who you want to be as a head coach, because there are head coaches that do both,
yeah,
right? And so you have to be genuine to who you are, authentic, and you gain the respect of older guys. But you can't come in here like you know all be all when you don't have anything to lay your hat on, like Super Bowl rings, because then it's like, hold on now, we're in the league now. And so, but he has to develop that by being honest and truthful to who he is, and really growing and really developing into who he wants to be. And that's going to take some time, because this is his third year as an NFL head coach. It's not going to happen right away, and he probably has more issues with maybe some veteran players, like, hey, why don't we do it like this? Where Belichick doesn't get questioned because he has a lot of, you know, hardware hanging around. And so you're more amped to do something that's out of the box, to your point, versus Cliff doing it versus somebody that's been solidified already.
And to that point, I bet you Bill Belichick, when he was coaching Cleveland, didn't have quite the same weight and leeway to do everything.
True. And Bill came up in a different era, too. It was more be told and listen, more players play. Today's world is a little bit different as far as the players having an impact in the show and question. Obviously, players are making a lot more. So you're going to have, I think, in today's NFL, more guys push back than per se probably like in Wolf's era, just because of the evolution of players impact or player's identity or whatever you want, however you want to categorize it.
Are you saying that Bill Belichick is not a modern hip coach?
Snap face. Snap face.
Imagine playing on a team with Bill Belichick coaching and Ron Wolfley. That's
instant shot.
That's some characters right there.
Woo.
That is what you're saying, though. That's a fine line, right? For a guy like Kingsbury, or I guess any young coach, but specifically Kingsbury, because he doesn't really have much NFL, even like he doesn't have any NFL assistant experience.
Yeah.
So like you can't come in and tell a guy that's been in the league for 15 years how to do everything, because they may actually know better than him. But at the same time, you have to be assertive. Otherwise, they're not going to respect you at all.
Exactly. And it's that fine line you have to walk. And I think, you know, obviously there was a huge shift to like younger coaches after Sean McVay. But we have to remember Sean McVay grew up in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
His grandfather orchestrated the NFL of the 49ers and built that team. And so he's been around football all his life. And so the validity and the respect that he has and how to operate in the league looks a little bit different. And so I say that Cliff has to have – you have to give him grace, even though you don't get a lot of grace in the NFL, because it's all about winning right now. And that's why I think oftentimes, like, Bill Belichick wasn't a great coach. Oh, he might have been a good coach, but he wasn't very productive his first time around. He got fired, right?
Yeah. But the players can tell, though, right? Even if the results aren't there.
And you can see it, but still there is a maceration process. And even as a coach, that you learn from your first time of the mistakes that you made, or maybe you wasn't as confident as you should be. Maybe you couldn't identify or the whatever the issue was quick enough, or be clear in your messaging. All that matters as far as how you operate a team and how guys are going to respond to you and collectively what you're able to do. And so I'm not saying that Cliff can't accomplish that, you know, from last year to this year. Hopefully he's learning and growing and with his mistakes and not doing the same things over and over. But sometimes it just takes longer, you know, just with players. Hey, man, I wish you was that all-pro player that we just drafted you for. I mean, same thing with coaches, right? And so it's just going to take a little bit of time, because there's a lot of growth there. It's first time in the league, and it's going to take – you know, sometimes you have to take some lumps, and hopefully these last two seasons, the way they finish, have been enough lumps so they can really learn and grow in his place and help this team finish strong and get to a playoff.
Text Pepsi to 620-620 right now for a chance to win custom Ketel Marte cleats, a copy of MLB The Show 2021, and an exclusive suite experience for you and your friends. That's Pepsi, 620-620. When we come back, the NBA draft is tonight, so who better to talk to than our own Kellen Olson? That's next. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander, in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, the NBA draft is tonight. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata, and our own Kellen Olson of ArizonaSports.com. I don't even think I have to introduce Kellen Olson anymore. He's well over, I don't know, 20,000 Twitter followers. Is that what you said, Jarrett? And growing, probably just jumped up another 10.
That's the buzz around the newsroom.
Yeah, the man covered the Suns run better than anybody, and we could see it coming more than maybe we even saw the Suns run to the finals coming. But he joins us now to talk about the NBA draft. Kellen, how's that for an intro?
I do not like how this followers thing is becoming a bit now, because everyone knows how uncomfortable it makes me when you guys bring it up. So now you guys are just going to keep bringing it up. I should stop talking about how uncomfortable it makes me, or you guys will just keep bringing it up. Yeah, that's how we operate around there, don't we?
It is. You can't show weakness around Jarrett. You know that's
I didn't even say anything. You said it. You
told me off the air to bring it up, and for some reason
that wasn't
I listened
me.
To
that
you.
Was the web department.
That was the entire web department.
Yes. They banded together.
All right, Kellen. So we're in a weird spot here tonight. We're not talking about the Suns with a lottery pick or a top five pick or the number one pick. They're picking 29th. So, in your research looking ahead to this, I mean, has any player stood out or players that you're like, it'd be nice if he was there at 29 and there's a realistic shot?
Yeah, there are a handful for sure. It's a really interesting draft. I think every single one is interesting to a certain extent based on where prospects rank, because there are certain parts of the draft that are better than others. And I think the end of the first round has some value for sure if certain guys are there. There are a couple of point guards that stand out to me. Sharif Cooper out of Auburn, Trey Mann out of Florida. ESPN's mock draft that went up this morning actually had Trey Mann falling to the Suns at 29. I use the word fall because I would expect Trey Mann to be gone by the time 29 is up, and then Sharif Cooper as well. But the thing about the back half of the first round, as opposed to the lottery that we've been used to talking about so much, is that these are prospects with serious flaws that are keeping them from being top 10, top 15 picks. And what happens around this range is that guys start to fall based on those red flags. Teams start to like other guys compared that they start to just pick their guy as opposed to like looking for value. And that's where guys can slip in a couple of different ways. And there are other guards to watch out for sure. West Virginia's Miles McBride. There's Bones Highland out of ECU. Guard seems to be the area to watch for, and it's worked out nicely for the Suns in that guard should be probably the position they look to add, and it seems to be like the deepest position in this part of the draft.
Looking at their offseason as a whole, I mean, this is such a late pick in the first round. How much do you think what they do tonight in this draft is going to impact other moves they make this offseason, if at all?
I don't think it will at all. I think they're looking at a guy who they will not project to play rotation minutes to start the season. They certainly did not look at Jalen Smith like that even last year, and that pick was 20 picks ahead. So I think that no matter who they get here, it would have to take someone who they're not only incredibly high on, but also kind of blows them away at training camp and just sort of looks ahead of ahead of schedule, essentially, and to take a spot. But I don't think if they take a point guard at 29, that means campaign's gone. I don't think if they take a center, that means they're not going to try and add a veteran's minimum big to kind of play the main minutes behind DeAndre, and they will be missing Dario Saric, of course, with his ACL tear. So I think that nothing's going to be indicative of what they're doing, but at the same time, they could add a name that really matters for them in a year or two, and I think that's the most interesting thing about this pick for them specifically, because you are two picks away from the second round. All first-rounders are on a guaranteed contract for the first 2 years, and then they have those player options. You guys will remember Dragan Benders was declined in his fourth year. We've seen third-year options decline from time to time, but 2 years guaranteed no matter what. So we could hit a point at 29 in the draft where the Suns aren't really interested in giving someone 2 years guaranteed that's available. The guys that they liked are already gone. Or they could look at it the other way where they really like someone there and think, hey, if this guy can work out right away or even next year, we've got him on a really cheap deal because, again, the salaries decrease the deeper you get in the draft. So instead of the $4, $5, $6, $7 million we were talking about around 10 to 11 the past couple of years, you're talking about a guy making half that, and that could be really valuable for them going forward.
You brought up Jalen Smith, and you know one of the biggest needs for this team, you also brought it up in there too, is, I mean, you're not going to have Dario Saric at least for a good chunk of next year. We already saw in the finals how much they need some help either behind or around DeAndre Ayton just in terms of depth. Not like Jalen Smith's going to step in and instantly be the guy this year, but how much do you expect them to use him this year, or is that still kind of a wait and see and they're going to have to address that need elsewhere?
Well, the biggest question and something that's going to be interesting to hear from James Jones tonight when we are going to talk to him after the draft is just where they evaluate his development and just where they see him kind of going forward in their plans. Because Jalen, when they drafted him, Jalen's a guy who can block shots, rebound, really energetic, long guy, and has some three-point shooting to his game. So it looked like, okay, you're talking about a guy who can come in right away, knock down shots, rebound, block shots, kind of a stretch five, right? But Jalen's a pretty athletic five and can move really well and can handle the ball a little bit. And it seemed like what happened is the Suns looked at that and saw a lot of potential in him and said, like, we could actually turn him into more of a 4-5 combo where he can work on ball handling. And if you come into the arena early, you'll see him 2.5 hours, 3 hours before the game working on ball handling. And I think that they've really been looking at him as a long-term project to kind of open up his perimeter game more. So I wonder where that lies into the fact of are they going to now look at him potentially as a five now if they could need him there actually with Dario Saric's injury. They didn't before, but now they do. And I just wonder where exactly their plans are for him going forward. That was the impression that I got on draft night last year and then just kind of watching him warm up, watching him play in the G League bubble for what we saw. That was the same impression I got as well, that we're looking at more of a four than a five. But that could change. That was before Dario's injury, and we'll have to hear from James and see next year.
Kellen, isn't it more fun to be talking about the Suns picking 29th in the draft instead of trying to figure out who they're going to take in the top 10 for once?
I think it's fun from a perspective of not having to look at this for months, right, and the stakes being lower and not feeling like the pressure of, like, I don't think anyone's going too crazy here. I don't think Twitter is going to burn down because they selected this guy instead of that guy, right, where the Cam Johnson pick happened, the Jalen Smith pick happened, and there was a lot of negative reactions to both of those, including for me. So I don't think you'll find me negatively reacting to whatever they do here at 29, but I think it is fun. It is more fun when the stakes are higher. I got to admit that, like, looking at those types of prospects, especially guys you can look at that they took. Like, Cam Johnson's a serious piece of their long-term future. We can talk about Jalen Smith potentially really being an important guy for them in the rotation next year because it's a lottery-level talent, whereas the guy at 29, and you're just hoping to kind of get lucky here and maybe land a guy who can be, come off the bench for you at some point.
There's not going to be a moment where they pass on Tyrese Haliburton and you, me, and everybody else in the newsroom just groans. We're not going to have that tonight, at least.
I don't think so. Maybe they'll be like, oh, man, I liked that other guy at Oklahoma or something. But, I mean, that'll be the extent of it. That's all you'll hear from me, at least, tonight.
All right, Kellen, good stuff. I'll talk to you tonight on the draft show. Thanks a lot, man.
Yep, thanks.
That's Kellen Olson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. NBA draft tonight. When we come back, we'll get back into the NFL. We already have a quarterback that's at least going to miss a few days of camp. Not the Cardinals, but on another NFC team. We'll get into that next. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
Well, as you would expect, a lot going on around the NFL. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata. Zoe, you brought it up earlier. We're already seeing Dak Prescott now dealing with a shoulder issue. I'm not going to read soreness in as too big of a thing, but it sounds like he's going to miss a couple days of practice, at least in Dallas.
Yeah, and that's expected, especially when you come off an injury of the magnitude that he's coming off of. You know, I think we know it was lower body, right? It was ankle. So you're like, well, what is that going to do with your shoulder? But if you play any type of sports, have played, you know, at a high level, you understand that everything is connected, right? And so I remember I tore my bicep in one of my games, actually my first year here, first game of the season, tore my bicep, thought nothing of it, got through it, ended up trying to play through it. And then 3 weeks later, I tore my Liz Frank in my right ankle. Or my right foot. And so your body works bilaterally. So something on your left side is going to eventually affect something on your right side. So the same thing that's happening with Dak, right? He had a lower extremity, ankle, dislocated, broken, whatever the injury was. And now his body's trying to figure out, how do I operate like I used to? And his shoulder is starting to take some of the brunt of that work with the soreness and probably him rehabbing and trying to get back. And that, I think, is playing into why he has his shoulder soreness so early in the season.
So you went from a bicep injury to a Liz Frank injury.
Yeah, I mean, because anytime that you impact your body, you know, whether it's left or right side, our bodies are so intelligent. It's trying to compensate so you can do whatever you're asking it to do, right? And so you start moving different. You start putting your hips in a different way, and then your body's not used to operating in that new compensating type of motion, and then you end up hurting something else. And so if you've ever just like been out messing around and, you know, maybe your ankle is hurting, and then you're like, man, why is my right knee hurting? I ain't done nothing to it. It's because your body's compensating and trying to figure out, how can I do what you need me to do and operate still at a high level.
And I guess, too, to be fair, it's not like you're sitting behind the board like Jarrett. Like, if you're playing football with a bicep injury.
I've never had a bicep injury, but I've also never had a bicep. So
that's smart. Easy. Can't injure it if it's not there. It's good thinking. To Green Bay, back to Green Bay for a little bit. Randall Cobb reunited with Aaron Rodgers. It was, you know, when that first came out over the weekend, Jarrett and I were talking about this the other day, when the first story I saw, or I heard somebody talking about it actually on the radio, and they're like, yeah, you know, Aaron kind of wants, he wants to make sure that connection is there with Randall Cobb, or they want to have Randall Cobb back. I honestly thought they were talking about they want to keep Devontae Adams, because Randall Cobb's a name I haven't heard in so long. Yeah. But
originally, Trey Wingo, beginning of this week, tweeted that, you know, the only one of the major sticking points for Aaron Rodgers to return to camp and play this year would be to acquire Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
And I remember people being like, wait a minute, let me check that check mark. That couldn't possibly be true.
Or what year? Is that from 2017?
They have a very, very slow internet, and it just finally went through. But yeah.
It makes sense, and that's probably one of the guys. I don't know if he named him in the. He named him, right? That's one of the guys. Like, why are we letting him go? Why aren't we signing him back?
Yeah.
Do you not see what I'm able to do with him as well? And those are one of those guys. I mean, you think about some of the receivers that Tom had, right? Edelman and guys of that.
He always has like a safety blanket.
What is that? Who is, you know, if you look at him, right? Wells Walker's another one. You're looking like, man, why do you want a guy like that? Because he's out there producing, I can trust him, he's going to be where he needs to be, he's going to catch the ball, he's going to make my job a little bit easier, we have a great rapport, and I trust him. And so that's what Aaron Rodgers needed to see, right? Okay, all right. So, and that was an accommodating, right, trade to get him back. All right, we're going to take one of your picks. We'll do Randall Cobb, bring him back. Obviously not a long commitment or a huge contract or anything like that, but that's what you have to do. And it makes sense because Randall Cobb was a really good player there for a little bit, and then obviously he's gotten lost in the sauce. You know, whether it's been injuries or just being on some teams that aren't good.
Or just being on Houston, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But now you put him back with Aaron. And hey, I know you guys were talking about a fantasy draft. That's a guy that you could pick up late that's going to probably have some solid production this year.
Don't let Jared hear
that.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, seriously. No, I mean, I'm just looking back at his stats because I do remember him having a few big years with the Packers. And that one year in 2014, 12 touchdowns, 1,287 yards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to your point, Aaron Rodgers isn't saying we need to bring Randall Cobb back because he's going to put up great numbers. It's more just like, I know where he's going to be, and it's going to make our offense flow. It's going to open things up for the running backs or Devontae Adams or whoever.
Right.
So that's sort of along the lines of what you were saying earlier of like, why wouldn't you accommodate your quarterback when, especially in that situation, like Green Bay's built around Aaron Rodgers, you know, so why wouldn't you give him, it's not like he's saying, okay, I need you to go out there and get me Julio Jones or I'm not going to be good, you know?
Right. Right, and you have to take some of that stuff into consideration because quarterbacks run this league, and if you don't have a good quarterback, your chances of going to the Super Bowl, you hoping and wishing, and that's just how it is. Unless you just have a insane year on defense, and your guy is, you know, doesn't turn the ball over, then you may have an outside shot. But if you don't have a great quarterback, your chances of winning it all are slim to none. And so you want to keep that guy happy. You want to put pieces around him that he's going to be able to trust and lean on in those times of desperation where he doesn't have to put the thing, you know, right into your hands or literally walk it down and hand it to you. You want a guy that's going to be able to make plays for you and that he trusts. And that's what it always comes down to. Because even when you watch Tom, you watch Peyton, you watch, obviously, Aaron. When they get upset, most of the time it's because a guy hasn't done what they're supposed to do, right? You're like, why did he make that? Well, it was really the receiver's fault, right? So they want guys that they can trust is going to be in the right spot. They don't have to be Julio Jones. I just need a guy that's going to be where I need him to be and is going to catch the rock. And Randall Cobb gives that to him.
It's always the best when you're watching football and the quarterback throws it and there's like nobody there and you just see them look disgusted and you're like, oh, somebody was supposed to be there. I think they probably worked on this in practice. I want to stay within the division. Jarrett and I talked about this a little bit briefly yesterday, but the situation in San Francisco where they draft Trey Lance, they make it so clear they're going to move up and they're going to take a quarterback, but Jimmy Garoppolo is still there.
Yep.
And like Jarrett and I were talking about this yesterday, there's a decent chance this is Aaron Rodgers' last year. I don't in Green Bay. I don't think this will be Russell Wilson's last year in Seattle, but that was at least talked about this offseason. But like for Garoppolo in San Francisco, who's nowhere near those guys' level, this is his last year in San Francisco, almost certainly, unless you know he wins a Super Bowl. But the weird thing is, that's true. I mean, they invested so much draft capital.
Right.
But the weird thing is like they are built to challenge for the Super Bowl. So is his leash? Is it just kind of, do you go into that season and say, this is your season, like you get this? Or if they start 3-3, would they really switch to a rookie quarterback in the middle of a season they think they can win a title?
I think a lot has to do with Trey Lance and the way he performs in practice and if they trust or have confidence enough for him. Because if I remember right, I don't know exactly how many passes it was in the playoffs. Jimmy G, it's not like he was just throwing the ball around and winning the game for him that way, right? And so, and their defense is really strong. And again, like if you have a strong defense and a guy that can be an X factor and not turn the ball over, and that's most of the time what young quarterbacks do, they turn the ball over trying to be too great. If they can get him to understand, hey, just play within the system, because Kyle Shanahan has a great system everywhere he's been. Washington with RG3, right? Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Jimmy G with the 49ers, they've put up some great numbers. And so the system can allow a guy like Trey Lance to be very comparable, not have to rely on all his talents quite yet, allow the defense to win just by handing the ball off, bootleg, take half the field, make it very easy for the young man early on. And so I could see them doing that. And then it gives you some running ability that Jimmy G really doesn't have. So I can see them, if Jimmy's struggling a little early, maybe they're 3-3 and they want like an X factor out there to maybe be able to convert some of them third and longs or second and longs and make it third and manageable. I can see that happening real easy because Kyle Shanahan has done a great job working with young quarterbacks and getting them ready. And, because I got to see it firsthand in Washington working with RG3 and how well. And RG3 actually won Rookie of the Year that year.
Yeah. That was over Andrew Luck too, wasn't it? I mean, RG3's issue was just he couldn't stay healthy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't know when to slide. So hopefully Trey can learn how to slide and you don't take those big hits.
It's a good point too. That's Shanahan's guy. Like that's the guy he went, because you just rattled off all these other quarterbacks he's worked with where he's kind of developed them from when they were young. And even Garoppolo, to a certain extent, he was responsible to him getting to San Francisco. But like, he got to handpick that they're going to draft Trey Lance. I'm sure if Trevor Lawrence would have fallen, he would have preferred that. But right, but he knew what he was getting when he made that trade.
Yeah, and I think they do a great job of just evaluating quarterbacks. Because another guy that they actually drafted in Washington when I was there was Kirk Cousins, right? And you can have your opinions about him, but that dude is playing at has been playing at a consistently high level, maybe not an elite level, but has been a starting quarterback for a long time in his league now. So they can evaluate guys, and then they can help guys develop and get to that next level. And when you have the attributes of a guy like Trey Lance, he can make that guy special. And that's kind of what RG3 had. And so we'll see how he develops in the pocket and when, if they can, you know, advance the passing game from, you know, traditional drop back and not just relying on the boot and the run game all the time. But I think under Kyle Shanahan's system, Trey Lance has a great chance of playing a lot earlier than, you know, letting Jimmy G take it all the way if Jimmy is not playing up to par.
This division, really, I mean, it feels like so much changes in the NFL from year to year that you can't say, oh, this is going to be the best division. And maybe it will change. But for the last couple years, it has been.
Right.
And it sure seems like it was going to be anyway. And then at least on paper, all the teams got better again.
Yeah. I mean, if everybody can stay healthy, I mean, it's another, you know, top tier division where you so battle tested when you come out, you almost kind of fade into playoffs
because you're just done.
You're just beating each other up because it is a physical league in our division in that way. So,
17 games, does that make it worse for those specific teams? I mean, I know it's worse for every player, but like in a division that's that rough,
yes, because it's an additional, obviously, it's not an additional division game, but it's still an additional game on your body. Having to deal with that physical play already.
Yeah.
So now you have to muster up another week of getting healthy, recovery, and then be able to catapult that into, you know, having a good playoff run. So it will be hard, because playing 20 games to, you know, obviously winning the Super Bowl, playing the Super Bowl is already hard enough to do as it is. So adding a game is definitely going to make it significant.
Yeah, you need that bye week too, and it's going to be tough to get a bye week in a division where everybody beats each other up all year. All right, we come back. Hour number three of the show, we will get back into Cardinals training camp, specifically J.J. Watt, but also we've got a little more audio now from Cliff Kingsbury from today as well, so he can update us as the Cardinals have four guys in COVID protocols that they put there today. That's next. It is the Bickley and Murata Show. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.